Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio. Today we get a unique look into rugby through the eyes of both a strength coach and a professional player. Tex talks with Kev Tunin and Owen Franks about the sport's transition through COVID and the challenges that that situation presented. This amazing discussion gives us insight into the culture, the leadership, training, and growth of a team from both player and coach perspectives. And never, ever underestimate the power of shit-talking. With all the cultural shifts that are occurring right now, may the ribbing between players never cease. More on that and a great discussion ahead. Here it is, episode 568.
Power Athlete Radio, welcome to another episode of the premier podcast in strength and conditioning, and we got two kick-ass guests from down under. Owen Franks joining us once again, and Mr. Kev Tunin, also a Power Athlete Radio alum, but now we're combining forces for a kick-ass episode. I got one question for you, Owen. Is New Zealand still considered down under, or is that reserved for only Australia?
I think considering we're closer to Antarctica, I'd say just New Zealand. No, right. Both. I'm not sure. What do you got, Kev?
I'm not sure. I think they're like our favourite cousin. I'll let tell you. I'm sure we're all down under. Are you close to Antarctica?
I haven't looked at a global map lately, but I assume so. Yeah, it's a bit colder.
Yeah, closer than us, right?
Yeah.
All right. We got a kick-ass plan. We were rapping a little bit before the show, and we're going to explore lockdown training. And Kev, you are the strength and power coach. I love the title for the Roosters down there. And Owens, you've been doing a number of training yourself to prepare for your upcoming game. So let's explore training during the lockdown. I mean, weight rooms were shut down, so coaches were forced to get creative. Kev, let's begin with you. Yeah. What did your team face? Y'all had to travel a bit, but then was anything taken away from you to help you empower your athletes' performance?
Yeah. So for us, look, obviously, you know, we were locked down with everyone else, and our lockdown was quite certain, severe here in New South Wales, where it was you're restricted to your home. And just before, we sort of played four or five games, and then the NRL wanted to, which is in the rugby league here, the national body, they wanted to continue the whole game and the whole season. So they moved us to Queensland, which is in another state. So they picked up all the teams, moved us all to Queensland, and then they put us in like little hubs, three different hubs. So there was one on the Gold Coast, there was one in Brisbane, and the Roosters and three other teams were in the Sunshine Coast in Twin Waters, which is, if anyone looks out on the map, it's on the beach. It's probably the best spot, I'd say. So we're in the Novotel in a resort in a lockdown. And we had 4 weeks basically where we couldn't leave, where we had to do all our training inside. When I first got there, we brought med balls, some bands, and that's all we had for about a week. So, and then over that, little bits of gear dripped in, but we had a game 2 days after we landed. So the preparation was really interesting. You know, in season, I'm sure, as you know, Tex, like it's, you know, what you're trying to do is give the minimum manageable dose to these guys. So you're not trying to improve them per se. You're trying to make sure that you can maintain what you've built in a preseason. So for us, it was, you know, field stuff, trying to keep their speed and their power up, trying to make sure that I could do something with some bands and some med balls, some short, sharp sprints. We worked on a little bit of mobility. And strangely enough, there was a lot of unknown for the guys as well. So they didn't know when they were going to see their families next. They didn't know. We picked up, I think, on a Sunday, or we got told on a Sunday night, and we flew out Wednesday morning. So the preparation time for these guys and for us was quite limited. So yeah, it was interesting. You had to get quite creative. So you look at exactly what do I need to go into the next game? What do I have to try and like elicit that response? And, you know, also you got to sort of juggle the psychosocial aspect of it all as well. You want these guys to, you know, there's a mental stress that sits on top of these guys when they play, but also when they move, when they're going to see their families. So that was an interesting couple of weeks for us. And for us, we sort of relied on our preseason, ticked off the things that we could tick off, and then try not to worry about the things that we couldn't, you know, deal with. So it was more just a, well, hey, let's go out there and play football and see what happens.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Things in your control. And this is one of the things we talked about recently with one of our online courses. Like, we targeted austere training, and the objective of the course was then to power the athlete, the individual, to create their own strength training workouts, whether you're traveling to a hotel gym or just you're creating your own home gym because you're sick of all the nonsense. And then that was the big thing. Resilience is what you can control, right? The old ball coach told us two things you can control, attitude and effort. Well, we wanted to add a third thing. You can control your movement. And that movement is your opportunity to, you know, have and lean on this psychosocial of realizing all the external stresses. It doesn't affect my ability to commit to physical goals, health, wellness within my ecosystem and environment. So I love that targeting, finding out what we need. All right, what do we got? And now I'm going to focus on my athletes as individuals, that psychosocial, man. That's good stuff. Owen, what was your perspective now as an athlete going into this?
Well, first of all, I haven't played like a hell of a lot over the last 2 years. I've had like a, since I talked to you, like, I haven't played a lot, 18 games over the last 2 years. My last game was in February, and I had a Lisfranc fracture on my foot that I've had some surgery for. And then I was just getting near the end of that rehab, and I've now ruptured my Achilles. Had a shit of a run. My lockdown experience was in England, and you know, it wasn't as bad as Kev's when the travel factor wasn't there. My brother rang me when he thought, you know, the lockdowns were going to start happening, and I brought some equipment for the gym, so you know, I can still get all my heavy lifts in. There's a park across the road. Could do my running and conditioning. So, yeah, apart from not being around the team and getting their constant skill work in, which is, I suppose, the big thing you're lacking, you know, because every day you're not working on your skills and refining that, you're losing a bit of timing and, I suppose, the feel for the game. But strength and conditioning-wise, I was fine. I just need to get time. Just need to get on the field.
Yeah, with that rehab or surgery, was there any doubt, any fear, or did you have to delay it at all because of everything going on?
I was pretty proactive in England. I had the injury, was operated on a week later. I think there's always the thing I've learned with long term injuries is that there's lots of ups and downs. You know, there's weeks where it's feeling awesome and you're like, man, I'm going to get back in record time. And then there's other weeks when you're like, man, have they even fixed this thing? It just feels like shit. I suppose the thing I've learned is it's key to keep level-headed and not to be real strict on your return date. I think it's more about, it gets thrown around a lot, but sticking in the moment and ticking off those key milestones, you know, being real diligent with the rehab and not, you know, getting your own ideas, which is something I can sometimes struggle with. You know, you think this is feeling awesome, I'm going to do a bit more, and then it tends to go backwards. But I'm becoming pretty good at rehab. You know, I've had a few of these long-term injuries. I think I could almost be a physiotherapist when I finish playing rugby. So
I'd go to you, bro, for sure.
Well, yeah, if anything.
Yeah, meathead physiotherapy.
that's a great
squatting
name.
After a week.
Yeah. We'll see if the Instagram's taken, and I'll squat on it for you. What is your plan after playing? I know coaching or some skill sets involved. What about creating that whole perspective of the athlete, of the biopsychosocial? Is that even covered and touched, or is it just assumed, oh, I'm a badass young athlete, I'm indestructible until I'm not?
Yeah, well, I think I've been punched right in the face with that the last couple of months, because, you know, 2-year contract, all of a sudden, that's in jeopardy, because I ruptured my Achilles a week before it was supposed to begin. Luckily, it's all worked out, and, you know, NZAU and the Hurricanes have been awesome in honouring that. And, you know, I'll be back for the second year. But, yeah, I think it's like anyone. You don't really think about it until it's confronted with you. And, you know, I've been exploring options. I think coaching and scrums specifically, something that interests me, and training for that, because it's such a specific position. It's a bit like, you know, John in the offensive line. It's such a tech. Yes, you've got to be strong and powerful, but, you know, you could be the strongest guy on the field, but if your technique isn't down pat, then it's useless. So I think I could really help people with that. Me and a guy, Jace Ryan, who's a scrum coach for Crusaders, we've developed a strength training tool for scrummaging, which is essentially like a horizontal squat, you know, where you've got to use your feet through the ground. Mm-hmm. So we're working on that. You know, I've talked a little bit to Kev around potentially going down the gym routes. Yeah, this latest injury has definitely got me thinking, but we'll focus on the rehab for the minute and let things happen organically, hopefully.
Yeah, Kev, what can you share from the team coach? I won't say gym owner. Oh, and don't freaking do it. Stay here as long as you can. But Kev, I mean, you have that experience, but then there's something with passion, and we've been fortunate to have a steak dinner and some wine down there, down under. But like, what is it about this team as the strength and power coach, this performance-based individual versus working with those normies with fitness goals that really draws and gets your chili hot?
Well, it was a means to an end, I guess. Like I started out working in the gym, and what I used to get was like guys like Owen and other athletes just dripping over the year, like over the year. And that used to just almost just top me up. So like, I could go to work every day and be like, all right, like I've got this block of, you know, general population. And then in a couple of weeks, I'm going to have a week with Owen or 2 weeks with these other guys, you know. And I used to get drip fed to some of the players from the Roosters, from the coach over the years too. So like, can you look after this guy for me for 3 or 4 weeks? Mm-hmm. So dealing with athletes was just, and specifically, like I was spoilt when I first worked with Owen, because Owen's like no other athlete you'll ever work with, because, you know, he's driven, he owns everything that he does. And he doesn't just let it happen. He'll ask why, he'll ask how, why, you know, why is this good for me? Why is this going to make me better? And then you only have to tell him once, which is that's a dream as a coach, you know, to explain something once and then someone to have the knowledge and the forward thinking to just use it and go with it. Yeah. And I guess when I'd sort of been in the gym for a little while, and then, I was about to take a long hiatus because I was getting ready to shoot myself in the head. It was just, you know, you're right, because, yeah, you get to the point you're like, fuck, you know, like, why are you fat? Well, because you're eating too much, you know, like it's you've got hand to mouth problems, and you're putting your hand in your mouth too fucking often. It's got nothing to do with the training. It's got all to do with you. So, again, there was no perspective or purpose there. And then Trent, who's the head coach of the Roosters, just rang up one day and just said, look, we'd love you to come on as the head of strength and power. And I think I didn't even ask about like how much or what it was going to do. I just said, yep, it's done. Like I'll start whatever. Because in a team, it's like every single day you've got, you know, like 30 something players to take care of, specific needs, and like if you don't take care of them properly, if you don't give them the right dosage of what they need, then you'll see that outcome play on Saturday or Sunday or Friday night. You'll see the direct result of your training, good or bad. So you're held responsible every single day, every single week, and the outcome is there for you to see. Now sometimes it's out of your hands, sometimes you get beaten by a better team, But then you had to pick up the pieces as well. Like you make, you know, you've got to look at the game and think like, well, were they fast enough? Were they strong enough? Was there something that was missing? Was there, what was their footwork like? You know, could they display their athleticism as much as they needed to? Or haven't I touched on the tools enough that I'm, you know, that these guys can do that? And then you end up, you look at rehab as well. You end up sort of cultivating these awesome relationships with these players, and you see them go through like these ebbs and flows of their careers. And, you know, we've got a bunch of guys on rehab at the moment, and, you know, they go through a down patch where they're like, fuck, my career's over. And then they see them on the upside when they're like, I'm coming back, I feel better. It's the most rewarding thing I've done. I love sport. I think it's, keeps me humble. It keeps me focused. It keeps me responsible for everything I do. And it's one of those things that I don't take for granted, and I never will. Like, I walk in there because I know I'm responsible for someone's livelihood. And I want the team to win. Like, I hate losing as much as anyone else. So it's like weekly, it's a mental ride as well. Sport's one of those things where it's, and Owen could attest to that. Like, it's nice being on a team that wins. It's like, that's really helpful. And when you're on a team that's like losing, everyone's just slowly pointing the fingers at someone else and saying,
It's crazy. That strength coach is a unique perspective and opportunity, because you get to spend so much more time with the sport coaches, and they got their individual position coach for their sport. At least this is how most American sports work. But you got your individual position coach, then you got your coordinator, and then you got your head coach. And so they get only so much time with each one of those. And then in crunch time and stress time, they just become a name and a direction and an arrow. But then as a strength coach, I'm spending time. I'm seeing them fail in the squat rack. I'm giving them a direction, a cue, or perspective to say, hey, man, what were you thinking in there? What happened? Why don't you try this? And you get to the opportunity to really develop and cultivate this relationship. I appreciate any sport coach that really involves themselves on the strength side of things, even just showing up for the warm-ups and talking to the players during the warm-ups, or coming and observing the sprint sessions and saying, hey, why are we doing this? What's up with this? How's he feeling today, or how are they feeling today? And then, developing a relationship with the sport coach to keep their finger on the pulse. So it's cool to see that this is the experience you found yourself in, Kev, and that the sport coaches value you as a person and entrusting you with their team's performance.
Yeah, and you've got to remember that it's football. As much as, as a coach, you think, as a strength coach, you think like strength, power, speed. Like, I want that. Like, that's all I want. I want them fucking 5 days a week. I don't want anyone else touching them. I don't want long distance running because you're going to, I don't want the conditioning coach to ruin all my good stuff. But it's football. So the biggest thing in the world is like, hey, skill sets. They've got to be able to catch, pass, run, tries. Like, it doesn't really matter in the end. So I've got to make sure that the footy coaches have got everything they need. And I'm asking like, hey, what do you see? What do you see out there that they're not like, what do you think they need more of? Like, it might be defensive. It might be, they need to tackle better, or their defensive footwork isn't there. So, all right, well then what can I do in the gym to help with that? Like, I'll try to help solve some problems, even just by a little bit. But in the end, we have a saying, and it's don't fuck with the football. That's our saying. So it means like, it's cool to do everything you can to support it, but don't get in the way of what our footy is about. And that's what we're about.
Did I pick up on you're the strength and power, and then there's a conditioning coach?
Yeah. So we do conditioning. Yeah. So it's very, very specific in terms of like, well, we've got, a bunch of different positions, and we then individualize those energy systems for those positions. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's, and we got two sports scientists, that then like look at all the data every single day, live feeds when we're out there as well. So we'll look at the GPS data, high speed, very high speed, accels, decels, total distance. That's all live over a headset when we're training. And so we'll look at a certain player and be like, hey, he's just had like, 357, meters this session of very high speed. Let's pull him back. Let's take him out. Let's put this guy in. Let's move that around. And because we know at the end of preseason, the dosage we want to hit for these guys individually. So get them like, you know, and an older guy needs not as much, and we don't want to fry this guy, you know, in preseason or during the week. So we've got all these little markers we want to hit and make sure we don't want to exceed as well, because you got to work backwards from where the game is played, you know. Mm-hmm. So we analyze the game and it's at the top end, at the fastest, strongest, biggest game. And then we work ourselves back from that, in terms of meters per minute, heart rate load, you know, especially, yeah, axials, decels is a big one for our game. So,
for sure. Yeah. Owen, how have you seen technology enter into the performance and the training side of things over your career?
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I suppose from the start of my career, the rugby week was totally different. It would be, you know, play Saturday, Sunday off. Monday come in, you do the review, but typically finished by lunchtime. You know, you might have a game of touch to get the ball in the hands, some sort of active recovery, you know, a bit of a laugh around, not really too serious. You know, Tuesday and Thursday, heavy days. Friday, you know, you walk through and play again. But it's, yeah, there's so much technology and sports science that's gone into it. Really, like Sunday, Monday and Tuesday are our biggest days now in terms of, you know, recovery Sunday and Monday, but also the amount of tape you've got to watch. You know, setting up your meetings for your week, preview, reviews, typically a heavy lifting day. And then it flows on from there. Thursday's actually leading into the game. I'm not sure how to do it with the Roosters, but that's sort of, they usually run that, you know, at 1.5 times game speed. You know, so it's can sometimes it's shorter, but can be harder than a game. And then you have a really big recovery Friday and then into it on Saturday again. But in terms of professionalism, it's just totally changed the way guys are preparing. You know, when I started, beers in the shed after the game were normal. You know, guys going out and drinking, and now it's, you know, Powerades, and then, you know, you've got a full smorgasbord of food in the shed, you know, recovery food. Yeah, just the way individual players, a lot more accountability in terms of running their week, you know, turning up, doing the prehab, rehab. It's actually crazy how much it's changed in 10 years. I know rugby's still a pretty young sport in terms of professionalism, really. I think it only went professional in 1995 or 6. League's a bit older, so I think it's evolving like really rapidly.
It's like a job. What the hell?
It's nuts. It's full on, isn't it? Like I was just thinking that we've got preseason. We train Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday off, Thursday off, Thursday off, day off, day off. So we get Thursday and Sunday off for the next three, four months. That's how it works for us. And the boys are in from say 7:30 in the morning till 4:35 in the afternoon. And they are like, their time is accounted for. Like, they've got time off in between sessions, but it's full on. And I don't know, but when Owen, when you played for the All Blacks, it's interesting to hear you talk about those times when, like, I guess the professionalism from Super Rugby, and then you play international stuff with like the All Blacks and the Wallabies. Like, that must have been a step up again for the professionalism, I guess, too. Eh?
It was awesome. I think that's the best thing for me about that environment, is that it had so much more resource behind it. You know, everything in New Zealand rugby really is geared towards the All Blacks and the All Blacks performing. You know, even at the integrity of the Super Rugby competition, really, in New Zealand. You know, everything's about the All Blacks. So when you get into that environment, you know, all the support stuff there, strength and conditioning, IT, they're all there to make you perform, you know, the best food. So it's awesome. There's a real responsibility behind it as well. You know, there's added pressure to it, but I don't know, for me, there's nothing better than being in an environment where everything's geared for you to perform, and there's expectation with that as well. And I suppose the players that stick in that environment really rise to the expectation and the pressure. Mm. And they relish in it, and guys who don't typically last very long.
Now, observation from the straight coach side of things, when I was working with a Division I football team, the observation, there was athletes that truly believed every sprint every rep in the weight room was going to lead to a national championship. Then you had guys that had those physical talents, the same as the above guys, but they didn't have that mental drive. And they extreme, amazing athletes, 4 or 5 star recruits. And then you had these walk-on guys that could maybe play somewhere else, but not as high level. And they just rode the bench. They did everything that you asked them to do. If you ask, I need you to go run through the wall, they ask how many times. So they would never see the field. And then it was like this mixture of these 3 different tiers. And you learn to love these walk-on guys because they're the most coachable. And then you learn to love the individuals that would take your advice, even though they were the best and the fastest. And it's this middle group that unfortunately like weighs on you as a coach. And then they're next in line. If that top performing tier individual gets hurt, then it's just the next guy athletically that steps up. And then that's when you start to lose games and your culture is affected negatively because, you know, then they, as Kevin, you point out, they start to point the finger. You know, it wasn't me. It was coach calling the plays. And so it's, yeah. If we could only have these walk-ons and then, you know, recruit these awesome top-tier individuals, we'd have a hell of a culture on our hands. But, you know, it's an interesting thing once you start to, you know, play the games and go through the hard times as a team, that true character comes out.
That's what I like about rugby and league. You know, there's always going to be room for those walk-ons because it's maybe the conditioning aspect of it, but there's always room for, I suppose we call them in New Zealand, battlers, guys who don't have a lot of talent, but they, you know, they'll run, battler. Like you said, they'll run through walls. They'll do everything that's asked of them. And you need a bulk of those guys, I think, to make up a really strong team. And touching on the other point in terms of good cultures I've been involved in, the really top ones, like the winning years we had at the Crusaders and the All Blacks, the group of those players who are sort of undermining the culture is like minuscule. You know, it might be one or two, and they get found out really quickly. Whereas losing teams I've been a part of, you know, there might be a handful, there might be 10 of those guys, and their behaviours are underground. So not everyone knows about it, but it's like a cancer in the team. You know, the locker room bitching and things like that, it just it really undermines what everyone else is trying to achieve.
Kev,
Very true, isn't it?
Yeah, Kev, what are you doing for your Rooster guys? Because you have the opportunity to apply stress and find out character real quick. Not only find out, but then provide them coaching, direction, opportunity to correct this behavior before they go in front of a sport coach. So what are you doing at your level to help your guys and really create this culture?
Power Athlete Nation, want to take 1 minute to remind you why Power Athlete is performance for the people. We love the garage gymmer. We love the athlete that is taking their performance into their own hands. We offer 8 different strength and conditioning programs reverse engineered from common goals like getting jacked, becoming more athletic, or introducing the barbell for the first time. To learn which program is best for you, head to powerathletehq.com/training. If you're an enthusiast, a parent, or a professional coach, we also offer education. At academy.powerathletehq.com, learn the method to the madness, the Power Athlete methodology, and a hell of a lot more. Next up, shop.powerathletehq.com. Hoodies, tees, sweats, shorts, you name it, we got it, including posters. You put this up in your garage gym, you're staring at it underneath the bar, I guarantee that you're going to add 10% to your next rep max. And finally, you can check us out on YouTube. We're dropping movement demonstrations going through our setup and execution of the finer movements found on all of our Power Athlete training programs and cutting clips of this podcast that you're listening to right now. So if you want to share in this experience with your lifting buddies, go ahead, seek out Power Athlete on YouTube. And now, back to the premier podcast in strength and conditioning.
I've got to be like, first off, Roosters recruit what we term good men. So that's one thing that we really want in the team. Like we'll push for a good guy over the best athlete because the best guy will influence the team the most. And the boys are really good too because they don't want to play for a guy they don't like. So we have a leadership group with we have a 6 to 7 guys that are in our leadership group. We've got and we have a captain, but the leadership group are the ones that are really in charge of the culture. And we've gotten rid of guys because they're not the type of men that are good for our team, not because they're bad players, but because they're bad for the team. And the boys will do that. The boys will tell the coach, hey, like, we just, you know, inadvertently, they won't play for him as hard as they'll play for someone else. But it's also about, like, making sure that as a, you know, we talk about culture all the time. I think it's one of those sort of, it's a buzzword, but for us, it's we don't sort of speak about it too much. We term it like, hey, it should be in the walls. When you walk into the place, you should feel the culture. You know, we shouldn't have it stripped all over the wall so you can read it. Like, it's not just something you read every day. It's something you feel, something you do. You know, like when you walk into the Roosters, regardless of who you are, every single one of the players, whether they're on the top tier money or mid-level money, they'll walk up and shake your hand, ask what your name is, and ask how you're doing today. And that's every single one of them. They'll shake your hand. They're always very polite. They're just good men. And that's something that, like, we pride ourselves on. You know, we want sportsmanship, and because we want to be proud of the jersey, we want to be proud of the way we play. You want to play hard, you want to play like violent, aggressive football, but it's that application of those attributes that you've got to be careful with. And for me, it's just about, like, you know, trying to guide the ship as best I can, you know, in my little part, about making sure that these guys are held accountable. But most of the time, like, I don't say much in regards to that. I just say, like, hey, these are the standards. If you don't meet the standard, then, like, I just point that out, be like, come on, that's not us. You know, that's not what we do. Or that's, you know, and specifically when you're looking at movement, like, I'm really, really, you know, I'm focused on the movement in the gym, because those small things, like, I won't let them get away with a shitty foot position. Like, I'll look at it and I'll be like, fix your fucking feet. Like, and they know now, you know, they know straight away. They don't mess around. And you know, those things, jumping on those small things fast, and then empowering them to make sure that they can go chase other guys for the same stuff. Like, they'll play and, you know, like, we'll just, they'll tell on each other and be like, oh, Kev, you know, look at Billy's feet. They're off again. Or they're like, hey, that's not a fucking squat. What is that? You know? So it's good. Like, you just let them run with it. Because the boys will keep the culture in check more than I ever will. You know, they're so proud of the whole thing. And we also, with Owen, when he played for the Crusaders, like, I know our head coach and the Crusaders head coach used to just to chat all the time. Like, we used to go over and have a look at other high-performing cultures and high-performing teams to find out what are they doing, what's the small things we could pick up. And we've got drills, you know, a Crusaders drill, we've got an All Blacks drill, we've got all these sort of things that we picked up from the time that we spent with Rugby Union. Yeah. So it's interesting. Like, culture is one of those things, I guess. You look at the culture that you guys have put together with Power Athlete. I mean, I was drawn to that because of those standards that you set, you know, and that's, like, all the way over. And, you know, like, where were you guys first up? Was it where was the first place you set up? What where was that?
Oh, Costa Mesa, California.
Yeah. So it started there for me. And I think it was John's football wads. Mm-hmm. And then to where it is now. And, you know, as a strength coach, if someone asked me what the best course I could do or I should do, I'm like, hey, there's qualifications you have to do here in Australia, but the best thing I would do is go to Power Athlete and do their methodologies course, because it covers on so much in terms of coaching, in terms of, you know, like, that type of pedantic good movement that you need. And that's culture in the strength and power or strength and conditioning realm that we need more of. You know, it's I guess it's everywhere. It gets, it's how you adopt yourself and how you carry yourself.
Well, how you do anything is how you do everything. And that's, yeah, culture is awesome. And with Power Athlete, we aim to empower through it and attract like-minded individuals through the one-liners, eat the week, be the hammer. And the beauty of Mr. Harry Heptenstall, shout out to him, is the depth and character that he provides. It's not just a badass one-liner. Essentially, he's created this depth and story that then allows our athletes who are training solo in the garage or out in the field or coaching and helping empower and create a culture within their own weight room for their athletes. For example, Eat the Week, a one-liner Wellborn came up with. Harry's expanded it. I'm going to read through it here. Eat the Week, not a call for cannibalism, but a mindset to dominate. Total domination, not only of your competitors, but of yourself. No one said it'd be easy. Conflict crafts character. Devour weakness, doubt, fear, and feeble excuses. Consume them before they consume you. Eat the Weak. And so that's a message and a mindset that we hand off. And through all of our training programs, like the expectation, as I mentioned earlier, you can control attitude, effort, and your movement. You know if you're short in a squat. You know if you're skipping reps, cutting rounds, half-assing through your warm-up, which then translates into the it's taking 1-2 strength sets to truly get warmed up, and you cost yourself that opportunity, that potential. So that's one thing there, man. And we feel all, as well, that culture is everywhere. Whether you're an athlete or a coach or a parent through Power Athlete, we're hoping and aiming to empower that performance, man. And if performance is simple as just waking up every day and feeling damn good about your body through movement and going and crushing your work or family or life.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think culture's it's also been huge. I've got a 6-year-old boy, and he does jujitsu, and but I take him into the club whenever I get a chance. And now at 6, you don't have to tell him, but he walk up to everyone and he'll, you know, shake their hands. That's what he does. So because he sees that, he thinks that's normal. He's got he sees these guys train all the time. So all he wants to do now is, you know, he's got himself like doing Nordics. He's got himself doing push-ups. He'll be all doing all those sort of things. And I love that because I want him to grow up around that physical culture, but also that real good man culture. You know, that's good. And the Eat the Week is great. But I think Owen had a better one when he used to play. I think it was he used to draw crosshairs on people's faces and put kill and destroy. Is that?
That's what worked for me, yeah. I think just being a 19, 20-year-old and yeah, it's almost you get yourself, you know, you're so, it's quite nerve-wracking at that age when you're coming up against men. It's like, man, what am I going to do to freaking prove my point? And, you know, even now I think I could learn something from that because as you get older, I think you get a bit more nonchalant. But, man, you can't beat that just in a drive to just want to, you know, basically you want to hurt people, you know, in our job. But if you could do it with some skill, you know, and while keeping your head, you know, it's a big advantage.
Oh yeah. Do Owen, talk to us about your leadership techniques. Do you go out of your way to help mentor the young guys, or you look for them to do something wrong, then say something? Like, what's your approach? Get out in front of it or aim to correct and guide from the back end?
Yeah, I think, when we're in the All Blacks is sort of forced upon us that, you know, you're each other's best coaches. So it's sort of your duty really to, you know, if you notice something to give feedback, or I'm scrummaging against the guy and he's doing something, you know, you want to beat each other and you're competing. But if he's, you know, not doing something right, you've really got to tell him. At the same time, I've never tried to impress anything on anyone. You know, if there's a guy underneath me, I'm not going to go over and I suppose I'm not going to go out of my way to tell him what I think he should do to get better, unless it's glaringly obvious and it's hurting him. I prefer to sit back and, you know, if they come up to me with a question or anything like that, I'll give all my time in the world. And same thing goes the other way. You know, if a young guy comes up and gives me feedback, I'm like, I'll take it because it's only going to make me better. It's a part of, I suppose, being humble and coachable. But yeah, I suppose my leadership style, like I said, I like to listen and gather my thoughts properly and then speak. So, you know, what I get across is clear and obvious, not just, you know, I think we've all been in a team where you're the young guy and you've just got the same guys speaking over and over. And a lot of the times they're just repeating what the coach is saying, you know, but then you have the guy who, you know, you can really tell he's listening about things, and when he speaks, he's got a good point to say, and it resonates with everyone. Whether I've done that or not, I'm not sure, but that's I suppose that's what I like to do.
Kev, you got any old wise guys on your team?
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, we've got a mixture of all that. We've got the young up and comers that they just say words. You know, they just say lots of stuff. Mm-hmm. It'll just be, you know, they'll agree with someone and then just say the same thing again. And then you've got the guys that, Owen's vintage in terms of like they've played so many games and been so many high level situations that they just say two or three things and then that's it. You know, and I think they're the guys that everyone always listens to, because they've been there and done that. And also, you know, it gets tiresome hearing lots and lots of words. I think if you have to, you know, like, again, I think we're visual humans, you know, like we're, you know, 80 something percent of how we learn is visual. So it's great to talk. It's, you know, but like, let's go do it. Let's go see it. Let's like, I want to, like actions over words would be great, you know. Like our older guys generally just say very little, and especially we've got a lot of Islanders in our team, you know, and those boys are just really, they don't want to say too much. And then they'll go out there and just crush someone on the field and then they'll just, you know, almost apologize for it. we've got a winger on our team, Daniel Tupou, and Toopsie's, I think he's 6'5". He's just one of the biggest, strongest, fastest wingers we've got. But he's such a nice guy that when he scores a try, he's almost embarrassed because he knows the cameras are going to be on him. So he just, and for years he got, everyone thought he was arrogant because he was just sort of walked off, but he didn't want the cameras anywhere near him. So he just sort of didn't celebrate because he thought it was rude to celebrate something that he did that caused the other team to, you know, lose a couple of points. So he wants to get out of there nice and quick. You know, he hates public speaking. He just wants to play the game and he's diligent. And as soon as you see him in the huddle, a game, all the boys are relaxed because they're like, hey, we don't have to worry about that side because, you know, Toopsies has got it. Or the same thing with like one of our other players, Jared Warrior Hargraves, who's just, you know, just an absolute animal. But you know, when he doesn't say that much, he's sick of talking about a lot of stuff. So he'll do it. But the boys know that his presence there means that like, hey, they're going to be okay. And they're the type of people I think you want on your team. And I think, well, I've heard many players talk about it with Owen. Like they just look around. Actually Offa said it to me once, and Offa plays for the All Blacks now. And he said it was relaxing and you felt nice and calm when you looked around the huddle and you saw Owen standing there, you knew that you were going to be okay. So I think that's Owen's leadership style, is that he'll just do. You know, lots of players feedback over the years where they're like, they hated scrummaging against Owen because they're like, you know, he's the most technical and strongest guy they've ever put up against, you know. And that's leadership in itself. Like, it's technical to a fault. Like, he's just, you know, he's great at it, and that makes the other team pay.
Well, forgive me, Owen. I didn't mean old. I meant vintage, as Kev would say. But that presence is a sense of leadership. And man, it's almost like I don't know if you can teach it. Just knowing that you're in the right. All right, everybody, calm down. This is the direction we're heading. Or you don't even have to say that. You just take that step forward, as you mentioned, man. So, Owen, when did you start to feel that you've established a presence, or have you always, it's just the way it was?
Look, I was lucky coming through. Like, I had really good, I suppose, leadership in the teams I was involved with. You know, some of the greatest, you know, in the All Blacks, a guy, Richie McCaw, you know, rugby nerds will know about. Brad Thorne, who's a dual international in league and union. And I really appreciated the way those guys treated me, because it wasn't on a, you know, their time wasn't on a silver platter. You had to earn it. You earn your respect. And, you know, there was no, it was no coincidence that when I first, you know, started having a good relationship with Brad Thorne, he was the guy who pushes behind me, was when I made my first start for the Crusaders and I scrummed really well. And then he, you know, would open up to me and, you know, become really good friends, and I appreciate that because I earned my stripes, and I knew once, you know, I could talk to these guys freely that, you know, I had their respect. So I know, so I suppose just learning from them, you know, action first, words second. Another thing that comes to mind that Richie McCaw actually said, because, you know, he was a guy of few words, but he's definitely the best captain that I've had. And he said on speaking, you know, are you saying something for your own benefit that you want to get off your chest when you're addressing the team? Or is it something that the team really needs to hear? And that's always stuck with me, because a lot of times in huddles or before a game, you know, guys are nervous and they're just spouting off stuff to sort of get themselves pumped up, or, you know, it's just part of the routine. But, or are you giving messages that are, you know, clear and concise and that everyone can use? If not, you know, it's fine to stand there in silence and just go play, you know. Like, I've always embraced silence, but it's something that's always stuck with me.
Yeah, I agree with that. We don't want to waste breath and then distract the team from the message. And, I mean, do speaking up in front of the team at a critical stress point like pregame, that does take reps. It does take opportunity. And I coach high school, and I don't want kids to fuck that up when they finally are in a captain or a leadership position. So to give them reps during our warm up, I don't do any counting as a coach. I just say, all right, we're doing 10 reps, and I hand off the counting to, and I call out a player's name. It's not just the leaders, the seniors, the captains. Calling out freshmen who are, you know, first year guys or second year or third year guys. Because the expectation is the senior, the older captains lead, but I'm giving the younger guys reps. So when it's their time, they've already found their voice. They've, you know, had that puberty squeak. They've made the mistake. They've embarrassed themselves during a warm up when it doesn't matter. And they realize, like, I can talk to my boys as a group. So it's, yeah. I understand where you're coming from, Owen, but I as a coach also want to find those reps for the guys so they know how to seize that moment and are very efficient when they get the word.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's different too for, like, you know, you've got a Tex, you've got this unique opportunity to show these guys, you know, how to be a good person, a good player. And, you know, it's they need to say lots and lots of words and get their own way through. You know, and hopefully by the time they're playing professional football or professional sport, they've sort of found their groove and they know what works for them. And I think, you know, the ultimate being, like, you know, the positions that Owen played with, or the teams that Owen played with, being, you know, everyone is so professional that they know that by taking care of themselves, they'll take care of the team. And, you know, there'd be nothing worse, I guess, than standing in a huddle trying to go over a game plan that, like, fuck, we should know what we're doing. Like, the formality now is the game, because we've done everything we can to step out there and, you know, and do what we need to do. I think the nerves come from, like, have I prepared? You know, have I done everything I should have done this week? Like, is this guy that I'm playing up against, is my position number, is he better than me? Is that why I'm nervous? Or, like, you know, you just step out there and just have this, like, have this zero effect in your brain where you're like, I'm right here, right now. Anything that's has happened, can't do anything about. Anything that hasn't happened, I can't do anything about. It's just time to get zero. But I think in the weights room, it's one of those awesome things where you can give someone a voice. You can give someone, like, you know, they can become a little bit more of a leader when you give them those roles. I think that's really important. What are the ages you've got, Tex?
Let's see, probably 15 to 18. 14, 15 to 18.
That'd be
full on. I'm in a great time. My first kid talked back to me. Come on. I'm not going to. Yeah, I was at middle school. Let's see, that's 12, 13, 14, previous couple of years. And now they moved me up to the high school. So teaching them a thing or two, like, that's not what you want to do. I got the whistle, pal. So we had a little punishment to pay for that one. And but fortunately, he apologized to me and then the team at the end. So it was a quick lesson. I don't want to teach that one again. But yeah, dude, having fun. And, like, it's an experience. It's my objective. I live in a very small town. So now I'm aiming to make my community better through coaching. Like, where Kev, this is your profession. Like, power athlete education, empowering performance for coaches and athletes, that's my profession. This is just my my community work. So now when I run into the families and grocery stores, I talk a little shit to the parents and you know, make a friend in the network. So it's fun. Like, I don't take it as performance driven as I would if I was in your position, Kev. So having a little bit more light and fun, but still the similar objective to really create and hand off good men to the community.
I think it's awesome, isn't it? Because I've got a bit of free time on my hands, but there's nothing better than getting messages, you know, whether on Instagram or whatever, from a kid who wants to become a professional. You know, and you want to give your time up for those those young teenagers or guys who take it seriously, and it's just awesome to see that there's kids out there like that, and when you pass on the info that they really take it. And then you see them do well. It's really rewarding.
It's interesting too, because I think you've got, like, in our squad at the moment, we've got a 17 and an 18-year-old messing around with, like, guys who are, you know, mid to late 20s, even early 30s. We've got two guys that are in the middle of their HSC, so they're doing their high school, exit exams. Mm-hmm. And then you've got guys that are, you know, just having their second kid, who are like coming, you know, it's such a unique dynamic. And so the boys really, you know, check the young kids, as, you know, but they're also very respective of the fact that, like, hey, I was there as well. So I know what it was like, you know. You've got a young guy he's going to be an athletic superstar for sure. But he came in the other day with, like, his hair a little bit colored. And just got teased, relentlessly. It was awesome. But at the same time, they're like, yeah, he's young. He just wants to look cool, and he's got to experiment with that sort of shit.
It's important that locker room teasing goes on, because if they didn't say anything and that dude stepped on the field like that, the other team would have a field day, and he might actually internalize it.
Yeah, and it's that's the best thing, I think, about, like, I went to a private boys' school. Where you, like, it was just relentless. Like, if you had a hair out of place, that was what you're getting ribbed for the entire day. Like,
and is that why you shave your head, Kev?
Unfortunately, that choice was made for me.
I wish I could have a stupid haircut. I'd probably relish it. Might even throw a mohawk or something. But
yeah. Oh, and just grow the rat tail only.
Yeah, well, I think that's all we can get, isn't it? Like, I don't even know back there anymore is going to do that well.
No problem with the beard or anywhere else. It's just on the top of the head.
Well, I think that's where most testosterone sits, is around the chin area. It's
You know, if John was here, he'd say strong beard, weak chin.
Well,
is that because he doesn't have a beard?
And that's because John can't grow a beard.
mine grew out of laziness. I just thought, like, shaving every day. Like, how long you had the moustache for?
Well, what are we on? November 22nd. So 22 days. Real. Yeah, it just grows in all redneck like this. Yeah, it's great. to go back, reference the gentleman that, or the kid that spoke back to me, he was speaking negatively about my mustache. So I was providing him coaching feedback on some, and he was fatigued from the conditioning. He was doing something wrong. I provided him correction, and his feedback, rather than making the correction, was to make a comment towards my mustache. No, you guys are free and welcome to.
Yeah, not sounds like a good kid.
Oh yeah, field day.
It's funny, isn't it? It's even better when they, like, we got, like, Movember here as well, and some of the boys are trying to grow a moustache. You know, like, these whispery little things that, you know, if I turn the fan on in the gym, it just, like, just off they would go. they always come in and you can, you know, they're like, you know, trying to go up to the light and just trying to get some, you know, a little bit more depth to it.
Yeah. Grow a mustache so, already.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. But yeah, I think that like the teasing and like, you know, just taking the piss out of each other, it's so important because you're right. Like if you don't learn to deal with that sort of stuff as a kid, well, whether you like it or not, the world's probably going to be a little bit more harsher. And like, it's fun to be able to take the piss out of someone, have it taken to you, not take it to heart and know that it's all in good fun and then just like get on with it. Like that's something that we do miss. Like, you know, I do it to my son all the time, but just, you know, we go back and forth. what have I been calling him lately? Like a little girl's blouse when he does something and makes a little noise. And he's like, I'm not a girl's blouse. I'm like, yeah, well, you're acting like one. So, we just go back and forth and it just gives him a little bit. I mean, I don't think his mum loves it. You know, it's like Owen and I talk about it all the time about like, you know, making our kids into machines just because, you know, it's like the ultimate science experiment, isn't it? It's so much fun.
I think the worst thing is when you tease your kid and call them names that, you know, not other people are used to. And then he goes off to his in-laws and he starts throwing around like, you know, dad called me this, or he, you know, thinks it's funny to call me an airhead in front of
Owen, we're going to need family. Specific examples, please. Egghead?
Egghead, yeah, he called me Egghead the other day because, yeah, like Kev said, you know, we kind of banter at home, like taking the piss out of each other. And then, you know, next minute you're out in public and he's calling you something in front of a bunch of people. It's quite embarrassing, but it is good. Yeah, it is fun with the kids, I think. I think I've always paid attention to what you said, Kev, how your dad raised you. So, you know, every morning I've sort of got it in my head that I've got to do something with the boys, whether it's go out to the garage and let them swing off the barbell in the squat rack or do some squats or, you know, even get outside and go for a bike ride just to, you know, get out of the, you know, the norm these days, which is seem to watch telly and, you know, sit on your ass. So.
Yeah. Well, the social media stuff or just having like an iPad or like one of those, you know, things to watch all the time, it's so detrimental to them. Like we ban phones, the Roosters, like as soon as it's playtime, training time, phones disappear. They don't come back out. And the boys actually now dislike having to have their phones. It's awesome. And it's the same with my son. Like I just make sure that we're outside playing. Like if he wants to do something, I'm like, sure, what do you want to do? Like you can draw, you can color, we can go outside. I'll never say no to any of that sort of stuff. If he wants to play, like, I think those things are really, really important. And then he'll see me train as well. I make sure I train whenever he's home with me. And then, yeah, he'll start trying to take me through a workout. That physical culture and that the idea that, this is something that we just do, I think is so important. I do worry about the future in terms of kids. And I think, you know, Tex, I'm sure maybe it's different for Texas, but is it, what's the physical culture like in the US now? Is it similar?
Well, we live in a bubble. Just as power athlete, I feel and I've observed when going and visiting family elsewhere throughout the country or, you know, traveling and taking this show on the road. Like we do live in a bubble of power athlete where physical culture is the norm, where having a barbell and squat rack in the garage is the norm. And I hope that that becomes contagious. And, you know, then it's weird that kids don't know how to squat when they enter their middle school. It's weird that they, you know, their friends put cars in their garage. What? You mean the gym? You park the car in your gym? What's wrong with you? And then make fun of them. So live in a bubble, man. And then it's similar as y'all are leading the charge with your own family. That's what I'm aiming to do within the community that I'm here and represent. So man, I can't speak for the rest of the country. And then if I watch the news to get a feel of what's on the rest of the country, I'm not going to get an accurate portrayal either. So
yeah,
just doing what I do, and they do what they do.
It's
I think you're right, Kev, around not saying no, because you know often you get home from work or whatever training and you just want to do nothing, but you know, so I think it's so important to make the effort with kids when they want to go outside. And you know, the amount of eels we've caught on the front yard there, I don't know if you can see the lake, but you know, like,
ooh.
Tom just wants to go out there all the time with his fishing rod and catch eels and go fishing. So I think that's a really important point.
Yeah, it is. It's so important. And then when you watch these guys come in, like we've got a talk a lot of football. We call it like a football head. These guys that are like just have grew up passing the ball, kicking it in the front yard, and they run around. And they're like, these guys have just got a skill level and this like innate ability to see things. Like it's becoming less and less. And we start to. You know, we're like, all right, we've got to go to Fiji. We've got to go to, you know, the Pacific Islands. We've got to go, you know, to New Zealand to look for these guys because the culture here is, you know, one of, like, it's a little bit more laziness. Now, whether it's a direct result of 2 years of lockdown and, you know, everyone being afraid of everything, I want to live in Texas so I can have open carry. I think that would solve a lot of problems.
Well, I will. One note on that is that there are parents that are encouraging kids to get out, and there's very addictive solo person sports: basketball, soccer, lacrosse. You can throw the ball against the wall, and then with the kids watching YouTube, they're seeing these amazing NBA players do these crazy moves, and then the parents kick them out or go play in the driveway. And they're trying to explore and hit these moves. So there is some benefit to this out there of kids that are able to combine the technology with the physicality and exploring movement through space and making mistakes, because it will go a long way for them to then be creative when they get the body that can handle the coordination it takes to be an awesome basketball player.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, you're watching someone like, you know, one of these NFL guys and their footwork and you know, to see that sort of stuff and then to go and try and practice it. I think that's really important. But then at the same time, you like the way some of our greatest footballers we've got like developed. So they developed by just mates in the backyard, and they've had to overcome something, or older brothers. You know, one of the kids that we've got at the moment, like he learned how to tackle and learned how to fend off his dad. And his dad just said, whenever I got tired and I want to go inside, I used to tackle him hard and try to hurt him a little bit. And that's the way he used to like finish the game. He was like, he just wouldn't stop. So you just got these like little bits of physicality where like, hey, if I'm the little brother, my bigger brother, I'm trying to play with him. I can't develop, you know, speed, strength, you know, too fast. I've got to develop skill, you know. So a lot of it comes down to skill and to skill. It's like, you know, Owen, like his dad just said, I think, was it Ben or you that decided he wanted to be an All Black first? And your dad just said, right, like now we're going to train, you're going to take it serious. And then it was just practice, train, skill, practice, train, skill. And he put you up against kids that were like, what, a year or two older as well?
Didn't put us up against older kids. I might have, but the big one I remember is, you know, New Zealand and Aussie. There's a large Pacific Island community, and Dad would always point out the biggest, you know, island kid in the other team. I always say with a mustache at 12 years old, and saying, you know, before the end of the game, you need to smash this guy on a tackle. So, you know, like I used to have one of my best friends and. You know, when we're playing rugby at junior grades, it used to be a competition for us to see, you know, who could do the most spear tackles, which is illegal now, but, you know, like pick a kid up and try to dump them on the head, which you're not allowed to do anymore. But as, a lot of stuff resonates. It's funny.
Yeah. And the skill level you get from those games, well, that the fact that you've got to, you know, it's crazy. Like we don't get enough of that ball carry stuff anymore. That sort of like outside, just, kick and chase and run and kick and chase and run, and then like these offhand stuff. And it's like the French do it really well, you know. They've got some fantastic just skill levels there. But we got a guy, Joey Manu, who's just lightning with the football. And he was telling me a story how when he was growing up in New Zealand playing rugby, they used to play in runners, and they used to have to strap, like tape their runners, because like the bottom of their soles are going to fall out. And then they have to swap their shoes over with the guy sitting on the bench because not everyone had shoes. you know, and that's now awesome. He's one of the highest players in the rugby league, but he's like that skill level he's got. He just loves playing football. Like, I don't think Joey would know how much he gets paid. You know, it's, but we look for that still. We look for that classic kid who grew up in the backyard who has high skill, and then we can give them strength, speed, power, like that sort of stuff. We can like, hey, that's you know, and then the coach will say that. Like, he'll just be like, hey, I want this guy faster and stronger. Give him some power for me. Give him some speed. Give him some strength. And like that's the fun thing for me, because I get these athletically gifted, you know, skillful kids, and then I just get to fucking mold them physically. It's
okay.
Yeah, it's a good job.
Conditioning coach fucks it all up.
He does. He ruins it. No. yeah. Well, that's it. Yeah, like I always just say to the boys, you know, they're like, oh, how come you don't come out and do the conditioning stuff? And I said, well, because running breeds cowardice.
Well, on that note, Kevin, I do handle the conditioning, and I participate as a coach in the conditioning. So the just so they, some kids draft and give a tempo off my, and some actually like see it as competition. I seek out the kids that see it as competition, which then, you know, it gives the kids that would just go through the motions, you know, the gap is getting wider. So now trying to speed those back end kids up just a little bit, so that way they can get 1 ounce better. Because, you know, once you guys have been in that zone of conditioning where you're not listening to anything or anybody, you're just in survival mode. Hopefully we get out of that soon, but.
I think it's all getting smarter now, because we're like, when you can track data, it's
that's awesome.
And like, and then there has to be a reason, there has to be a why. Like, why do we do this? Like, why is it this long? Why are we going, like, why didn't we hit this speed? This is speed day. Like, well, we're not having enough rest. If it's repeat speed day, then they've got to do this. So I think hopefully, touch wood, for most of the NRL and most of the like professional sporting teams, mindless conditioning, like I'd say, would be gone. But you still hear stories, like I still, and especially in professional sport, where you talk to other players and they're like, they can't wait to come and play at the Roosters because the program is just so like professional, you know. And I think too, like it's, you know, if you don't move with the times, if you don't, we're looking at virtual reality stuff at the moment too, just as a, you know, instead of coaching videos, we're looking at like, you know, doing virtual reality where they can put the headsets on and they get even a better feel for what they're doing. So anything we can do to speed up the learning process, like that's, you know, that's what we should be doing. So technology is also great in that regard as well.
That's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Kev, just looking up the team here, and it says premierships. Is that like a championship?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just curious.
So we've got we had back-to-back there, so.
Yeah, see that 2018-2019 question. What's up with the wooden spoons?
That means when you come last.
Oh, yeah. It's a bad thing. Good, because you guys only had it 5 times.
What years were that?
1949,
sweet. Okay.
63, 65, 66, and 2009.
Yeah. Well, that's when, at the end of 2009, we got a new coach, which is hence the wooden spoon. It's never a good thing for a head coach to get a wooden spoon, or any coach really. Even this season, like we had the season just passed, we had horrendous injuries. We had ACLs, it's frustrating as hell. But you look at everything and absolutely everything, and you take everything so personal. But I think fan-wise and the feedback from everyone else, even though I think we ended up coming fifth overall, like people enjoyed this season way more than they enjoyed many other seasons because of the fight that we had to go through every single week, which, you know, from the outside, I'm sure that looks cool, but fuck, it's just, you know, it's not nice when you're putting a team together every week going like if we get one more injury, like we're in trouble. Like, you know, it was just... We had two guys retire due to HIAs at the start of the year, and they were two co-captains. And then we had two ACLs on one night, about 5-6 weeks later, which were two other of our in our leadership group. I mean, and then that just sort of just like your team, it just sort of can crumble overnight. But we held it together for the season, which was good. But you can have these couple of smaller incidences, which I think brings back the point of culture. Like I think with any other culture that we wouldn't have got through the way we did, we would probably have given up. But the idea was, and the thought process and the team was like, fuck, we can still win this. And like, imagine if we win this, you know, stats wise, you probably, you know, we weren't going to sort of win. We just sort of, you can see that happen, but the belief was still there every single game. Yeah, and that's important. I think that's probably that was one of the hardest seasons, but also one of the most the season I learned the most in, for sure. Yeah, because you got to keep coming up with excuses as to why it's not your fault.
Oh, careful. In the States we got something called next man up.
Yeah,
a philosophy, a mindset that even though you're a backup, you're still preparing like you're the starter because you're always one injury away from like your breakout, your shot.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to do that. Like, And it was all too real for our guys. Like there were guys that were probably looking at playing 3 to 4 games last season and they end up playing 15, you know.
It's a win.
But that's put us even in a better spot this season. Mm-hmm. Because we've got all this, like, all these young guys that have so much more experience. And now they're just, you know, they've gone through all those horrible times. Like, nothing could be as bad as that last season in terms of, like, hey, getting thrust into the fact that you have to play. And now it's, you know, we've got this in this sweet spot where we're like, oh, we've just got too much to pick from now. You know, guys that we didn't think we'd keep. And then now after that season, we're like, wow, we've got some gems here we didn't realize. It's cool. It's really nice.
It is very cool. Apparently, y'all have been around since 1908.
Yeah, I don't know what the game looked like back then, though. I don't know if you can see pictures there. They look like middle-aged men that just, it was probably not too far off the Great Depression, that one. But it's one of the oldest teams. It's got one of the greatest histories. It's funny because we're sort of seen in Australia and I'd say definitely within rugby league that they call us the cappuccino drinkers. So it's all, you know, we've got like the team's got a lot of money, and we're sort of seen as that like high society type of team, which is so funny because it couldn't be further from the truth. Mostly our players are from everywhere else, but the team originated from like the slums of Sydney back in the day and like all the, you know, all the dirty, rotten places that just now happen to be, you know, the great places to live in Sydney. So the team has this, like, we still hang on to that. Like, no, like we were founded and born in like, you know, the hardest places. And that's where we look to the game. Like we want to play those hard moments. We always want to play the hardest part because we want to take the other team to the darker spots. We know we can survive there. And we want to make sure that we'll take them there and see if they can survive as well.
I like it. Do you talk about that? It's a great culture.
Yeah, we've got each season we've got points. So, and we always bring it back to Warriors for these guys because we've got some, you know, we've got Maoris, we've got Pacific Islanders, and we try to relate it back to their cultural Warriors and just the attributes of these guys. And so we talk about that. We talk about, you know, the American Indians with one of their things was putting a stake in the ground. They tie themselves to their stake. They put a stake in the ground, and they wouldn't leave that spot unless someone else cut their stake and set them free, or they died or killed everyone on the battlefield. So when we talk about, you know, getting ready for our defense, we talk about laying our stake. You know, like, we don't fucking leave until the job is done. You know,
is that what that phrase means?
Yeah, yeah. So if you Google it, yeah, it's called laying your stake, and it was with the American Indians. And these warriors used to, like, grab a big stick, put it right in the middle of the battlefield. They'd be tethered to it, and they'd either got cut free by the head chief, or they fought and won, or fought and died. So it's like, it's almost like, yeah, it's like a, I will not leave here until, you know, and either way, I'll like, either someone else will cut the stake, or like, I'll be dead or standing. Yeah, so it's interesting, and we draw comparisons for these guys, you know, everywhere. But they don't need to be reminded about why they're doing things for you. It's as simply as, like, I'll give the intent of the session. Like, you know, yesterday we did speed and dynamic day, and I was just simply like, I want you to move this bar as fast as you can. Each rep needs to be moved fast. Like, I want good form, I want strong technique, but I want fast and explosive. And then we'll give a couple of demo reps so they can see what that looks like. And then it's explained, then I'm like, right, go. And then it's, for me, it's just topping up by using words that I've used in the warm-up, where they can draw back to it. I don't have to say lots and do lots of correction, you know. It's just like speed, you know, technique, you know, like feet to the floor, those sort of things. So they just, like, triggers them back to what they need to do.
Yes. The sport is the perfect cue for an athlete. Just bringing what their coaches are saying into the weight room, and then hopefully dead bugs and the language you use in the weight room, coaches start to use on the field. That's the picture perfect of a strength conditioning, or I guess a power strength conditioning guy, and then real sport coaches.
Yeah. You can overcoach so easily, and I'm sure Owen's been overcoached. You know, like,
yeah,
it's nothing worse than just having words thrown at you. Like, well, just tell me what I want, what I need to do. You know, like, simplify it for me.
Yeah. I think I was always pretty lucky, unless I was, you know, underperforming, or, you know, they could see me on a downward slide. They sort of just left me alone, and I knew if I had a good game, no one would talk to me. So that was sort of, that must have been my reward. actually, the worst. Probably the worst bit of feedback I've had was, I think it was one night before a test match in 2012, and Crono, the Fords coach, called me into his room. The meeting lasted about 30 seconds. He drew a graph of the, you know, the, you know, like a huge upside, and then it just crashed all the way to the bottom. And he said to me, he's like, what do you think this represents? And I was like, I knew what the answer was, but I said, oh, I don't know. And he said, that's your form last year, and this is your form now. They're crashing to the bottom. Damn. And this was the night before, like, a big game. I was like, fuck. But, yeah, I think it was done to poke the bear, so to speak, and it worked.
It worked?
Good,
yeah.
Good constructive criticism.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's shit. Here's you. Get better.
Yeah.
Go.
That was the sort of language I got.
Yeah. Well, Owen, what's your team's mascot right now?
Mascot, Hurricanes.
Hurricanes.
I don't want to call myself a Hurricane because I haven't played a game for them yet. I'm fucking injured for the season, but it's an airplane, I think. It must be modeled after a Hurricane airplane.
Oh, that's cool. So, Kev, here's a question for you. All the colleges in the United States, there's like Iron Hoyas or Houston Strong. Like, what is the Roosters? Are y'all cock strong? Like, what's your phrase and saying?
Definitely, cock strong.
That'd make for an awesome mascot, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There are parts of Sydney that would love that. we've got a rooster as our mascot, and so the rooster's feathers are, like, we've got the Harbour Bridge as part of the feathers, and then the rooster's sort of the origins of it, like, it's you know, it's a protector. It's like, it's strong. It's, you know, it's courageous. But it, the heritage goes back into the, like the, like, I'd say like mid 1900s. I always look at it and think like, you know, the rooster reminds me of that dude in the weight room that, does too much bench and not enough legs. But you know, I keep that one to myself. But usually, because we're from the east, and our simple saying is like, it's just like east's a win, always, like we're always there to win. And I guess we don't have too much saying or too many chants or anything like that. It's just, we're here to win premierships, and that's just the way it is. Like, we don't, our whole year is not based around coming fourth or fifth or whatever, or third or second. We're just here to win premierships, and that's all we are. Like, you come to the club, you're here to win. You're not here to do well. You're just here to win, and that's it. Like, that's a, like, just an understood, it's understood, I guess. But I will bring Cockstrong up in the next team meeting. I'll bring that up this morning.
I'm looking at the rest of the mascots in this, in this league here. Tigers, Cowboys, Titans, Sharks. It's all pretty weak. So if you bring Cockstrong into the mix, I think you've automatically won the premiership.
I'll tell you what, if there's a new power athlete program called Cockstrong, I'm straight on.
Okay, feel strong, you heard it here. Next cycle, Cockstrong.
Hopefully they got those push-ups in there.
Just one.
Yep.
All you need just is one.
Jack Blackspray, yeah. I'll bring it up.
Owen, when can we expect you at full speed?
Hopefully. I mean, an awesome rehab for me would be, I suppose, talking to Kev, I said 6 months, but I saw the look on his face. I'm not sure whether he's convinced. But anything close to 6 months, I'd be pumped with if I can get back on the field and back playing again. That's I'm aware of the way it looks at 34, having these long-term injuries, but I've got so much self-belief in my body and what I'm capable of. If I can just fucking get on the field healthy, I just want to give myself a shot, you know. So I'm going to chuck everything at this rehab that I can and give it a crack next year.
You're definitely a chance for sure. I think it comes down to physiology. I don't think it's like a chest of your mindset. I mean, if your body would do what your mind said, I think, you know, like you'd be back there in 2 weeks. It's just one of those injuries, isn't it? Like we were just talking about before, whereas like it's not necessarily the tendon will heal. It's just about your ability to return to play, because that gap between finish rehab, doing your field training, and then being able to go to game speed, that's the big gap. And those are the things that take a little bit of time. Like it's like an ACL. Like your first season back after an ACL is a good year, and your second season is your great year, just because you get that feeling back into it again.
And I suppose I'm lucky. Like, I might miss Super Rugby, or, you know, best case scenario, get back for a couple games, but then there's a break between that, and then we have our domestic competition here, Tex, where it's a level down, but it's still pretty competitive, almost semi-professional heading into the second year of my contract. So, yeah, if I can be, you know, really ready to go by then, I can cut my teeth in there and get, fully good to go for that second season of my contract. That'd be a good result.
Mitre 10 comp is a lot like our Australia Super Rugby. So you guys are doing okay. I wouldn't worry about that.
Yeah, I won't comment on this.
New Zealand rugby techs kills Australian rugby. It's we could just not.
Luke,
not play
Luke and
it
I were
would be okay.
Yeah, Luke and I were down there, man, 2017 for the World Cup, and so we were in Sydney watching New Zealand Sydney. If it wasn't the final, it must have been maybe Final Four, or at least the World Cup. They were playing each other.
Yeah.
And, Australia had a chance until they didn't. So we didn't know what the hell we were watching and just having a good time.
Yeah. It's
I think it was their mascot, the Wallabies. I'm all mascot over here because I know nothing about these sports.
What what was the last World Cup? When was that? Just gone?
19, Japan.
19. Yeah. Which again, like we sort of knew going into it, but like there's been a new head coach.
Time correction. I guess we were there 15. It's every 4 years, right?
Yeah.
All those trips now blur together. Too much.
Oh no.
Spirits.
Oh, like those old days for you guys were just that would have been excellent. Just travel, teaching, coaching, mm-hmm. beer.
It's a great time.
Not bad. Yeah, not bad. I actually had Paige on my podcast a couple of months back. She's a female rugby player. She's, I don't know, you know, Owen, she's like this pretty blonde girl, and she was the one that had a nose point across her
yeah.
face.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's yeah. Yeah. It's a good podcast. Yeah.
Geo Paige for our listeners.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was out there 2017 again, and I think that's when we connected, Kev. Maybe.
Yeah.
I
yeah. It was. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. But when I was in Brisbane, connected with her to give her some training, and she was coming back from a knee, and this is a profound moment for me as a coach because the guidance that I gave her, like she kept on saying, "Oh, my bad knee, my bad knee, my bad knee," and I was like, "No, put an end to it," essentially, and just gave her the perspective. This is your new knee, and this is how I want you to speak and communicate on this. There was a switch. The movement changed. I got this on my Instagram from way back, but we're doing different forms of step ups just to give her confidence back in it through different planes. We're doing, and I know we did these, Kev, and this may be what sparked me doing it with you was the drunk steps where we're stepping across, and then we have to pull through the transverse plane into a good step up position on the box. So. To our listeners, I'll do my best to describe it. Imagine there's a square box and we put our right foot on the left side of the box. I'm going to take my left foot across my right and place it on the center of the box. I'm going to bend my back knee, get active on my right foot, and then try to pull my body now rotating through space into a normal step-up position. So, yeah, I think this is when we explored that. That was a good trip. I think Brisbane was first and then hit up to Sydney. Connected with you and her, man. It was a eye-opening experience. Know nothing about rugby other than when to. I cheer when the people around me cheer, and I boo and hiss and throw beer at the television when the others do that too. So, Homer wherever I am.
Yeah, that's 100%. Yeah, you nailed the supporting aspect. That's all you need to do. Yeah. I only had some good slurs back in the day. Would you get like Tex? You heard of Ned Kelly before? Like Ned Kelly is like he was a bush ranger basically back in the day in early Australian days where he was basically just a robber, and dressed up in like sort of steel helmet and steel body armor, and he's somehow he's become like a national icon. Like we celebrate this guy, and I think one of Owen's slurs when he was playing here in Australia, like one of the crowd yelled out and told him he looked like a fat Ned Kelly.
it's actually the greatest compliment I've had in my career because we were having a competition amongst the front rowers, like, you know, who could, you know, we had to grow our beards for 6 months. You know, whoever cut their beards lost. So I think it was me and Ben were down for the final two. I don't know if you know Tex, but Queensland's probably like the Texas of Australia. So all these like supporters, drunk, throwing, you know, chat at the guys on the bench, and yeah, I got hit with the fat Ned Kelly, but I was actually pretty pumped with it. Sort of fitted my game day persona, so pumped me up.
I'm getting such is life.
Yeah. Oh, there. It's like playing in Queensland for the last 4 months or during the last season. Like, the crowd is out of control. Like, so I'm on the sideline with the boys, warming them up, getting them ready, and you get abuse hurled at you. And some of the most constructive abuse in the world. You know, you just, yeah, it's great. And then it's hard not to laugh. Like, you know, I usually just ignore it. But when someone comes out with a really good sledge and it's directed at you, you're like, that's pretty good. Yeah, I like that
you
one.
You can't give them anything. No. As soon as you acknowledge, change your posture, smile, dude.
Yeah,
you're done.
It's hard. Yeah, we've been getting sledged. Actually, we were playing the Broncos, and we were sort of, it was a close game, and it shouldn't have been. And we're getting sledged the whole way through. Like this guy was so close to where I was, and he just kept abusing me, and like I just kept looking forward, and like the last 5 minutes, I couldn't help myself. He said something, I looked over. I was just staring at him. He's like, "Yeah, what are you going to do?" Like that. Anyway, on the right on the on full time, one of our guys, Adam Kieran, kicked the field goal and put us ahead by one. And I couldn't help it. I just turned on the buzzer when we were one by 1 point. And I just started laughing at him, just like fuck it, like. And, oh, he lost it. He was like trying to get over the fence. And I was like, "See you, princess. Bye bye. Enjoy your game." Like, you know. He was losing. And then he sat there and sulked until we left. Like he just sat down and just drank his like.
Well, that's about all he can do. That's why he's sitting in, yeah. in the stands there.
That's right.
Just ruined his yeah. life.
There's a yeah. documentary about, there was one NBA game in 2004 where the players and the fans got into a fight. And that I think that was the last time like a fan actually crossed the line. So there was lawsuits. There was all this. So there's a documentary on Netflix. It's called Malice at the Palace.
So, oh, yeah, I saw that. That was awesome, man.
Yeah. Dude,
the funny thing was that the guy who biffed the, what was it, like a can of soda or something to kick the whole thing off, the basketball player who got hit in the head, he went up and punched the guy next to him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The guy who started it, just stood back. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. It's, the crowds get loose, you know, they get like, you know, but yeah, like we sort of like, I look at it in a really simple term. I'm like, I love how passionate they are because they're following the game. So, you know, I generally don't take on board what most people say, you know, in terms of if I'm getting sledged anyway. So if I can't just let that roll off my back and just have a laugh. But I look at it in terms of like, hey, these guys are so involved in the game. They're watching the game. That's exactly what we want. Like, that's brilliant. Let them go for it. If they have a small heart attack, hey, that's
they're destined.
That's
to.
Life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is what I would do. So you got your weight room. You got your arena. I would hire all these Queensland fans, give them 10 beers each, and then just record. Give me your worst. I'd record it all and capture it all. And I have it on this tape or this playlist. And then just like when my guys are mid lift or clean or heavy ass squat, I just play one thing. And then just really get them stress inoculated to all this shit talking. I'll be laughing, but they'll be just able to, it's like water off a duck's back by the end of it.
Yeah.
And then they're ready for anything. And then the only level up is if fans start throwing beer. And that's really when the weight room gets interesting.
Yeah. We had one of our players, Jared Warrior Hargraves. He's he's a huge man. He's like one of our most aggressive, angry, good dudes. And he's great. Like off the field, he's like a really, you know, really beautiful guy. But on the field, it's you know, if you're playing against him, it'd be very dangerous. And then he was sitting down the bench one game, and this fan was just screaming at him. And eventually this guy's like, you know, Jared. And eventually Jared said, "What?" And the guy went, "Oh, my dad knows your uncle." And he was like, "Sweet, tell him I said hi." And he's like, "Thanks, Jared." That was it. The entire bench was laughing. Yeah, it's...
Do y'all have fantasy sports down there? You familiar with these are?
Yeah, yeah, most of the boys are into it. Like they're all like, but they're all into the NFL. It's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, our boys are mad into it.
My only heckling experience is with baseball. And we used to buy tickets. Our team was bad. Our local team was bad. So we'd buy nosebleeds just as high schoolers and then walk down to the prime seats right behind the opposing team's bench.
So basically, I don't know what those seats cost, but got in for $5 and sat there. So heckling the batters as they're coming out, and I yell at one guy, just his name was Corey Patterson. He was on the Cubs at the time for our American listeners, but Corey Patterson, you're on my fantasy team. Like, that's not a heckle. That's just what I yelled.
Yeah, yeah.
He turns around and gives me like this cockeyed weird look. Like, what the what? And then my friend leans over and they're like, I think he just heard Corey Patterson, you're my fantasy. And I was like, I'm never talking shit again to a professional sporting event. No, I'm out.
Yeah, well, he went home that night too, and like some dude like just called me his fantasy. Yeah.
Weird dude with a weird mustache. Well, guys, anything we want to plug? Do we want to direct people to follow these Roosters? And Kev, I know you got a pretty hopping social in terms of training. Where can we send the listeners to continue to follow and support y'all?
Sure, yeah. So I've got my Instagram is Strength Elite. And jump on there, have a follow. I think the Roosters, Sydney Roosters is the NRL team that I work for as well. Go and support the boys. And that's it. Yeah.
Owen.Franks on Instagram. But like I mentioned earlier, me and my mate Jace have come up with a strength training tool for scrummaging called Iron Back Scrum. So if you can give that a look on Instagram, and should be coming out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'll be sure to include that in the show notes for people to link it up and have some fun with it. And then for everyone else at Sydney Roosters, just comment hashtag cockstrong all over their Instagram until they're forced to do something with it in their marketing department.
That's right. I'll let the marketing department know as soon as I get to work this morning.
There's going to be a wave of cockstrong coming at you.
That's the next thing that's coming out of this podcast.
Yeah. Cool. All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us on another episode of the premier podcast in strength and conditioning, Power Athlete Radio.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. You can contact Owen Franks and Kev Tunin on Instagram at Owen.Franks and at Strength Elite. Until next time, bye! Drop on.